Everyone knows the guy in the Oval Office, but you might not know the stories of the women who stand next to them. From Martha to Michelle, First Ladies have influenced history in ways big and small. And now they're the subject of a new book, First Ladies, Presidential Historians on the Lives of 45 Iconic American Women. Edited by Susan Swain, the co-CEO of C-SPAN, this book is definitely timely, with the first First Lady to run for president running for a second time. To give us some good First Lady backstories, we've got Mark Farkas with us. He's the executive producer of C-SPAN's original television series, First Ladies, Influence and Image. And Mark, thanks for taking some time. Good morning.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Steve. I appreciate it.
Well, as long as we've had presidents, we've had first ladies. In the first 100 years of the Republic, Mark, which of the first ladies really set the tone for the position?
Well, in many ways, just as George Washington did, Martha Washington set precedents for first ladies. But when you really think about someone who embraced the role completely, I think you've got to look at Dolley Madison, you know, who comes right at, you know, there's Martha Washington, then Abigail Adams, who's a force in her own right. But Dolley Madison really takes politicking to a new level. The entertainments at the White House, she's the sort of the yin and the yang of the Madison marriage, is James, who's small, diminutive, and incredibly smart, obviously. And then you've got Dolley, who's smart in her own political and savvy way. She brings together people at the White House at her entertainments who I don't think James could have brought together himself, and sort of woos them and brings people together. And so, you know, I really think that she redefined the role in many ways.
And how about more recently, Mark? I mean, who shook things up the most in the 20th century?
Well, it's hard, you know, in all the polls of historians and the book that, you know, we're talking about, we've got 56 of the best presidential and first ladies historians who participated in a poll. And in all the polls, Eleanor Roosevelt obviously comes in at number one for not only what she did during the White House years, but the post-White House years. And I think that's something you have to think about with some of these first ladies. When you take a look at someone like Betty Ford and what she did, not only by revealing her breast cancer during her time as First Lady, but and after the White House with the Betty Ford Center, imagine how many lives she really has touched. It's, you know, you can make a good argument that maybe she's done more to improve the quality of life for Americans than perhaps her husband did. So, you know, but Ellie, you've got to go back to Eleanor Roosevelt, because she really, again, another mold breaker.
You know, there's probably a few different ways to use your time as First Lady. Are there some who were, you know, more involved in politics than others, Mark?
Yes. I mean, when you go back to the 19th century, you've got someone like Sarah Polk, who obviously James K. Polk was Speaker of the House. She was very, very much of a political partner to him. She attended debates when he was in Congress. She edited his speeches. She was up on Capitol Hill while he was president. And so there you've got a real political partner. And then, you know, and she was outwardly so, you know, to the point where she was meeting with congressmen on the Hill. Then you have others who are behind the scenes political partners, someone like Nancy Reagan, who may have not been involved in political, you know, issues, but surely was involved with personnel decisions. She famously, you know, whispers in the, not whispers, but was pretty forceful with President Reagan, and had Don Regan, his chief of staff, fired, who she did not get along with. She told us in an interview she just had these antenna that would go up whenever she knew that someone had their own agenda and not, as she said, Ronnie's. So there's, and you know, then obviously Rosalind Carter was very, again, very much a political partner to Jimmy Carter. She attended cabinet meetings. And then, yeah, I'm sure you've talked about Hillary Clinton, who was a political partner as well. And who knows what's going to happen in the next election? You've got potentially a first spouse to be a male.
We're visiting with Mark Farkas. He's executive producer of C-SPAN's original TV series, First Ladies, Influence and Image. We're talking about a new book out from folks at C-SPAN, First Ladies, Presidential Historians on the Lives of 45 Iconic American Women. You know, were there any first ladies, Mark, who just didn't want their husbands to be president at all?
Well, you all out there in Kansas City, Missouri, are probably aware of Bess Truman.
Yes.
and the Trumans from Independence. And, you know, each chapter heading for each first lady, we have a quote, and I'll just read you what Bess said, and it gives you a little bit of a window into, I think, her reticence as first lady. And she says, "We are not any of us happy to be where we are, but there's nothing to be done about it except do our best and forget about the sacrifices and many unpleasant things that bob up." So, I mean,
that's our best, Mark.
That's your best. That's the boss. That's Harry Calder. That's the boss.
Yes.
And I think she had influence with him, but, you know, she spent a lot of time in Independence during the time that he was president, not only taking care of both of their mothers, but the family business. It's interesting. One of the clips that we played in our program shows her at National Airport, now Reagan National Airport, christening an Army air hospital. And they did not prepare the bottle of champagne correctly. And you may have seen this newsreel.
I have.
It's hilarious. She's hitting the bottle, and it just won't break. And she's laughing and being a good sport about it. The irony is that was her last real public event as First Lady. We talked to Clifton Truman Daniel, the grandson, who said, you know, that was a tipping point for her. You've got Bess Truman. You certainly have someone like Jane Pierce.
I was going to ask you about her, yeah.
What's that?
I was going to ask you about Jane Pierce.
I mean, one of the most tragic stories of all the first ladies is what happened to Jane and Franklin Pierce. They had lost two sons. She did not want him to go back into politics, and he had sort of made a promise to her that he wasn't going to do it, and then he ended up running for president. And so you can imagine her unhappiness with that. In between the time that he was elected and the time that they made it to Washington, they were taking a train trip. It was the last trip they were going to take before they were to come to Washington as the first family. And the train derailed, and right in front of their eyes, their son Benny, their last son Benny, was basically decapitated in front of them. Which, when you think about all of us, you know, as human beings and parents, when you think about something like that. And so she sort of saw that she was a very pious woman and saw it as a sign from God that, you know, something is amiss. And so her 4 years as first lady, you know, she didn't spend all of her time holed up on the second floor, but she did, you know, she wrote letters to Benny. And it was a very unhappy 4 years for her. And I think for Franklin Pierce as well.
Mm. Well, today, Mark, First Lady seemed to pick an issue to work on, you know, from the East Wing. Has that always been part of the job description there?
It's not really been part of the job description, but it's something that goes back, you know, quite a ways. But, you know, now it's sort of in an official capacity. But you can go back to someone like Lucy Hayes and make connections to today. I mean, Rutherford B. Hayes was in the Civil War, so all throughout his time as governor of Ohio and then president of the United States, she had an interest in helping out veterans and veterans' causes. And even, you know, we look at that today, Michelle Obama, one of her causes is veterans' issues. But the actual, you know, taking on something that's very public and advocating for it is much more of a, you know, a more recent phenomenon. Jacqueline Kennedy makes her cause, you know, the refurbishment and the history of the White House. Lady Bird Johnson with her beautification, which is really an early look at an environmentalist. So you have, it's more of a modern phenomenon to take on these official causes.
We've got a former first lady now running for president. Remind us what happened during her time as first lady that might help us predict that she might one day run for the office herself.
The first thing you look at, obviously, is her involvement in the healthcare task force that the president named her to be part of. And, you know, she testified on the Hill as part of that. Ultimately, I don't think the country was ready for it at that time. She was, you know, the task force was not a success. But I think those seeds of seeing a very public first lady, someone who was willing to go outside the bounds of just, you know, taking on causes that aren't political. Again, you've got a sort of a mold breaker. But again, I don't know if the public was ready for it, but I think it's a window into, you know, her interest in public policy. She was, you know, obviously a lawyer, very accomplished, just as accomplished as he was when they got married. You know, she was teaching law school. So I think there are things, but it's interesting to see, I'm going to be interested to see, and actually some of the guests who we had on our program and who were included in the book, you know, one of their questions is really how much of her time as First Lady is she going to be talking about? Because it was obviously a very challenging time, not only the Monica Lewinsky and the healthcare task force, but if you remember, they had there were other problems at the Clintons had in terms of investigation. So I'm going to be interested to see how much it's brought up by her and by her opponents.
You know, which reminds me, I mean, how much of a correlation is there between serving as First Lady and serving as president, Mark?
I don't think we have any idea since nobody's done it.
There's a hot potato question for you, yeah.
But I would have to think that they're seeing so much. And again, they may not be involved in policy like Hillary was, Mrs. Clinton, but they surely, you know, talk to the president. They're very involved in state visits. Both to foreign countries and bring diplomats into this country and entertain them at the White House. And so I don't think there's any way you can't, even by osmosis, be aware of what the job entails. Now, again, part of that depends on how involved you want to be. Again, Rosalynn Carter, very involved. Barbara Bush, less involved, but still, I mean, obviously comes from a political family and I think knows some of the tricks of the trade.
You know, people these days, you know, analyze what Michelle Obama wears and where she goes and who she talks to. Is this a new trend?
I think we've always been a culture, you know, that sort of a cult of personality. I mean, even back, you know, terrible things were written about, you know, Abigail Adams in the newspapers. They were calling her Mrs. President. They thought, you know, she'd overstepped her bounds a bit. It was interesting as part of our series and in the book, you know, we did an interview with Laura Bush and we put the question to her, you know, should a first lady be able to take a salary? And she said, no, First Lady should not be able to take a salary. But she said the more interesting question is, should a First Lady be able to keep a job or a first spouse be able to keep a job outside the White House? And that's something that I think the country's going to really wrestle with if Mrs. Clinton is elected. So, you know, the story is still being told, I think.
You know, Mark, C-SPAN's First Lady series was part of a year of 90-minute episodes, and now your colleague Susan Swain has the book out on the subject. Why are the First Ladies so popular over at C-SPAN these days?
I think they're popular in the country. That's why we did the series and the book for a couple reasons. One, there had never been a television series or a web series on all of the First Ladies. And it's an incredibly different way to look at history through a different prism. And I think they're important people. I think if you take a look, and women's history is something that's really understudied in schools and in general. And if you take a look at the arc of women's history in this country, these women sometimes are out in front and leading, and sometimes they're helping it along, and sometimes they're not. But, you know, it's just a different way to look at history, but a very important part of history that I think is really overlooked. And I do think, again, some of these women had quite a bit of influence, and I'll go back to Eleanor Roosevelt. You know, FDR, with his disability, is not able to travel the country. So who is traveling the country and putting more miles on a plane than the president? It's Eleanor Roosevelt. There are so many of these first ladies that are, again, have influence over their husbands. And so I think it's important to study them.
That book that Mark referred to was First Ladies, Presidential Historians on the Lives of 45 Iconic American Women. It's edited by Susan Swain of C-SPAN. And Mark Farkas, again, was executive producer of C-SPAN's TV series, First Ladies, Influence and Image. Mark, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Steve, thank you for everything you do, and we appreciate you talking about the book.
You bet. Thanks, Mark.